Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 95 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd news. We're going to get started in entertainment and video game talk with the latest on Xbox's xCloud and Game Pass services, as well as some movie talk around the decision for Mulan to go to a Disney Plus premium model, AMC potential price increases, and new movies hitting the theaters as they come open here this month. And then we'll move over into tech news with a quick follow-up to the Garmin ransom, some speculation on cyber or hacking threats to Neuralink, and then some space and robot news. There's a lot to get to, and we're going to get started.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, and welcome back to the Cantina and episode 95 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And this is another weekend. We've got some news, definitely on the entertainment side. Maybe we're starting to break out. Everybody's still getting ready for these openings here in these theaters. We'll see if they actually happen this time.
Yeah, I'm really getting my hopes up now. Like, it's really getting close. Yeah, I'm just waiting for that one board on that drawbridge to break so I could fall through right at the end.
Are you able in like A-list able to go in and like reserve
seats?
No,
so I keep checking my app waiting to see if I can pre-order tickets, because that's what I always like to do. I like to order my tickets weeks in advance, pick my seat, and just know I have it covered. So every time I open my A-list, it sends me to the on-demand portion. If you want to like rent a movie, they have like the streaming Redbox type of thing. And every time you go to coming soon and things like that, it's updated all the dates. So all the dates are on there, but you cannot purchase tickets yet. And my A-list hasn't gotten reactivated yet. You know, and
I mean, that's probably a good thing, because if they reactivate everybody and then they push everything back, it's probably going to cause some subscription problems there for them.
Yeah. I mean, am I at the point right now where like, raise it $5. Just give me a fucking movie. I don't care. I'm just like, hold the date strong. Cause the minute my A-list fires back up, it's just like, okay, yeah, here we go. Here we go. And I just, yeah, I'm just aching for it. You know, we got some release dates coming up in the next 2 weeks. So we'll see.
Yeah. And I mean, you talked about them raising like your A-list subscription by $5, but you know, there's some rumors of AMC, I'm sure Regal and Cinemark are looking at the same things as far as price increases out of what their normal ticket prices would be.
So they're talking about raising prices. What I hope it is more like a COVID fee. So when you buy the ticket or when you buy your concessions, that there's just like another layer of added tax. So it's easy for them to remove once we get back to I hate even saying the word normal anymore, because there is no fucking normal from now on.
We only get to say new normal.
Yeah.
You can only say new normal.
So as soon as like we get to the new normal, I'm hoping they can just like scratch it off. Like, I don't want to see a ticket hike and then it just perpetually stays there like the goddamn fucking tollways. Like, oh no, we're only like here for 5 years, and then we're gonna pay for the highways, and then we're gonna go away, and they just stay for 50 fucking years charging you $1 or something every time you get on a goddamn E-way.
Yeah, no, they'll just do like a 50% price increase and then later just discount it 20%, and it's like, hold on a second.
Wait a minute.
I'm still paying quite a bit more than it originally was.
You know, so like, I have no problem paying like a COVID fee, you know, like, hey guys, it's shit's crazy. Like, I get it. Shit's crazy. Here's $5. Like, I'm down. But when shit's not crazy, drop that crazy fee. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm good on that.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, there were restaurants around here in California that were doing that on the receipt, there was like a COVID surcharge that they were putting in there, you know, essentially just demonstrating that, hey, their meal prices haven't changed, but here's the additional cost. And I was okay with paying
that. Every time I go to a restaurant, you have to have paper menus now. So I'm assuming they reprinted these menus. And I'm not smart enough to remember how much that steak cost before COVID. So they probably did raise it. And I just don't know because I'm an asshole and don't pay attention to that shit. I eat what I like. No, I eat what I like, and I don't look to the next to the number next to it. I just fucking eat it.
No, I definitely know the price difference.
Nope.
I could taste the price difference. I can eat the same food and be like, man, this tastes about $2 more expensive than last time. I'm not a fan.
Portion size went down. This scoop of potatoes feels a little light. Feels a little light, guys.
Yeah, I think that would be a reasonable way for AMC to get by because, you know, I don't care what happens. Maybe that first weekend, they're going to get some big numbers of people who've just been pent up and wanting to go support the theaters get out. But I think in the long run, they're not going to be full of capacity. They're going to have a hard time justifying it. The COVID surcharge, I think, would be reasonable.
There's 1% of the population that's never come out of their house ever fucking again. Like, so I think every business from here on out is losing at least 1% due to shut-in syndrome. I'm never leaving my house ever again, and I'm stapling this mask to my face.
Yeah, but those shut-ins, you know, while we're talking movies, we can just stick on the movie thing, and you know, maybe the shut-ins win again. As you know, we've been talking for months now about what movies we're going to survive or bring back to life the theater industry. And it was always Mulan and Tenet. And now what we get is the decision this week from Disney to still release Mulan in the theaters for whatever theaters are open, but simultaneously release it on Disney Plus for a premium, which I don't think that Disney ever had a plan to have a premium subscription or a premium price on. Like right now, somebody's in the background trying to figure out how to pay-per-view. Yeah.
They had Goofy in the back writing code.
Yeah. But in the end, they're looking at a $30 premium video on demand fee within Disney Plus, which I'm wondering, do you have to have a Disney Plus regular membership?
I would assume so.
Or is it like Amazon that you don't have to have Amazon Prime membership to watch Amazon Prime videos on demand?
No, because you can't log in. You can't log in and see anything unless you have a Disney Plus account.
I mean, but they're changing the whole plan right now.
Yeah.
So do you really want to shut it?
Well, the one thing I will give them is that if you spend the $30, it's not a one-time viewing. You unlock Mulan to watch as many times as you want.
Is that a fact?
Yes.
All right.
So that's the difference. I didn't see that. Yeah, so that's the difference. It's not exactly like the video on demand where you pay the $20, you got 24 hours or 48. I think Trolls gave me 48. My kid got to watch it for 2 days. Mulan, it's like unlock this movie, you know, like DLC kind of content. Like it's Disney's DLC. So you pay $30 and now you get Mulan. I don't think it's like you own it, but you do get it for a lengthy extended period. You know, they didn't go specific, but they definitely said it wasn't like a one-time kind of use. And it's in the theater at the same time. Like you have the option. You know, like if you want to support the theater and it's open, you can go still. You don't have to stay at home. So this is kind of like in between the Universal deal we talked about last week and the Trolls deal that pissed off the entire movie industry. So I don't know which one. I still prefer the theater only for 3 weeks than video on demand as opposed to what Disney's doing.
Yeah, I actually think that preserves theater. I think that this model really, really threatens kind of the theater industry way more than the other. It's hard to still have that hype, especially when people have, you know, phenomenal theater systems in their home, HD TVs being, you know, great quality, and they're relatively prevalent in many people's homes. And yeah, I saw a bunch of people, whatever else, talking about, oh, well, I'm already paying for Disney Plus. You're going to make me pay $30 for this when, you know, I can go to the movie theater and for $30, I can have some popcorn. I don't know who's going to the movie theater, but like, I can't take my family to the theater and spend less than $30.
I go by myself and I spend about $30.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't take my family. So, I mean, there's still significant value here if you're a family or just throwing a Mulan watch party for you and all your friends in the dorm or on their neighborhood or whatever it happens to be. In the end, there's still a great deal of value in doing this. And I think that value over time would just defeat these a lot of blockbusters, a lot of major movies, which is why I was surprised to see this blockbuster go this way and not follow the Tenet agreement with AMC for that 17-day release.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of watch parties, that's the next movement they got to really pick up for these things, right? Is so that you can watch them. You know, not everybody has a home family to watch these movies with. And part of the experience was the shared experience with, you know, your friends and, you know, meet up and things like that. So if you're going to do at home video on demand, I think that all these other apps should be racing for a watch party component. I know the My Movies Anywhere app just kind of came out with, at first, initially they rolled out, you can share your movies. So I can loan out certain of my digital titles to people, like I think it's like 3 a month or something like that. So I can send you a code and you can watch a movie that I have purchased digitally on your TV. And then 2 weeks later, they also rolled out any of those movies, I can do a watch party with up to 9 other people with those movies. So they're starting to expand what you can do with your digital content now. And I think that's where, like, you hit the wall with video on demand, is that you're stuck with people in your house. Well, in a fucking pandemic, when you're quarantined in your house and nobody can fucking come over, what the fuck's the point? You know, like, why am I paying $30 to watch this by myself?
Yeah. I mean, in the end, I think there could be some good benefit for consumers, but mostly in this instance, you got to think the benefits on the side for Disney. I think Disney's savvy enough to know that this is their best chance of recouping their costs on this movie, on this big budget movie. It's reported that the anticipated amount that Disney would keep of like the streaming fees, this $30 fee, is like 85% of that $30 is just going to go to Disney. Whereas the box office fees, the company, the production company only gets 55% of box office fees. So they're already getting an additional 30% of any of that money that's coming in, which is pretty significant, as far as you don't have to hit that $1 billion mark to still have about the same level of revenue generated to Disney itself. And then I'm just waiting for, you know, right before this movie comes out, you're going to see like, hey, get Mulan for free with a 1-year subscription of Disney Plus.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to go that far. They need that cash.
No, what they need is a subscriber base, because that subscriber base is how you further Disney Plus. That's how you get more investor money and things at Disney Plus, is when you're saying that you're nearing Netflix level in total subscribers. That's how you win.
Well, I know Disney Plus just released some kind of milestone of subscribers that they're actually, I think, way ahead of their like projections at this point. I want to say right now, they had 33.5 million subscribers as of March 28th, and right now they have 54.5 million. So they're already up 27% since COVID happened.
Yeah.
So they're almost at, you know, they're nearing 60 million subscribers. That's a lot of fucking people. Like, you know,
I mean, it really is. And
yeah, I mean, because Netflix, mean, they're in the 100 millions, but they've been around forever. They're the leader. They're the godfathers of streaming, you know. Like, so for Disney Plus to be out for what, a year, less than that even, you know, they're,
yeah,
to be almost at 60 million with releasing very minimal original content, they're still riding the coattails of like Mandalorian. So
it's that Hamilton.
It was, they got the Hamilton boost, and I'm willing to bet that, you know, Mulan ain't going to hurt them.
No. I don't know. I mean, we can, I guess, move on from Mulan here. But in the end, I think it's going to be interesting how it plays out.
I think that's another August 28th release. So, yeah, we'll find out in 2 weeks.
But we've been talking about Disney, you know, we've been talking about Mulan and Tenet being the ones that get to reopen the theaters and save the theaters. But now they've got a new heroes that are in that first slate as far as big movies that nobody was talking about. But New Mutants is now ready and primed for this this early release.
It's been done for 3 years.
Like, waiting for this moment. Like,
it's been done for 3 years.
Waiting for this moment.
So yeah, like I want to say. Yeah, this is the first new movie that will be available, and really, it's like they're just throwing it to the wolves to see how it goes.
I honestly feel like it's probably going to make more money than if it just had a summer release in the middle of everybody else's.
Well, if you thought the movie wasn't going to make money and you've held on it for 3 years because you can't find a good time to release it to be profitable, why not make it the first movie available? I mean, any people just waiting to get out of their house and sit in a movie theater, if this is the only thing playing, I'm willing to bet that they make it just as much money, if not more money, releasing during COVID than they would have if they'd have just had a normal rollout with heavy competition.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think they're going to probably make more money. Even though it looks interesting, it genuinely does.
It's got one of my favorite mutants in it. I'm looking forward to going and seeing what they do with it.
Who's that?
Ileana. You know, she's got it's Colossus's sister, and she has a very like demonic. I don't want to give anything away, but yeah, she has a very hellish background and very interesting story arcs in the comics, at least. So I'm waiting to see how they introduce her, what they're going to touch on, if they're even going to refer to her as Colossus's sister, you know. So that's piqued my curiosity.
All right. But yeah, I mean, it's coming out August 28th. I think I'm curious to see what the reviews and things are. You know, this is part of what used to be Fox Movies Studios. Now it's just 20th Century. They killed the Fox, but this is an old legacy that just needed to get out there eventually, and this is its time. So we can move on from movie news and the entertainment side and just talk a little bit about some video games. We've got some new announcements regarding the Project X Cloud for Game Pass.
Yeah, after the crash and burn of Stadia, I thought they would just give up on this, to tell you the truth.
Now that you know the first one to market is always the sacrificial lamb. Google's really good at doing this. Google is really good at trying out new things and just being terrible at it. But then somebody else comes in later and takes care of it.
They still send me an email like, hey, play us. Play us.
I'm so glad I never even opened mine.
I know you are. I'm so glad.
I got it in the mail. You tested it, said it was trash, and I immediately sent it back.
I know.
What a win.
Lucky fucker.
But the Project X Cloud and these X Cloud Gaming starting in September 15th. So if you've got a Game Pass subscription already, you get this at no cost starting in September 15th to start kind of testing this out and seeing how cloud gaming works for you.
If you like to play shit on your phone, it's a definite win for you. I mean, unless you have an iPhone.
Yeah. So Apple gave that big announcement this week, or really kind of clarification on why Stadia and in the future xCloud is not available through the Apple App Store.
I just love how they've released like these finely worded corporate memos regarding this stuff, and it's just sheer petty. Like, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, it boils down to sheer petty, but they release these memos and these professional jargon, like, for the integrity of our software. And it's like, nah, you want to do your own iCloud and fuck everybody else's cloud. So you can't play your cloud on our games. How you like that? Man, man, man.
Yeah. And their argument is that Apple is incapable of reviewing every game that's open through Game Pass. Same thing with Stadia. They also did not allow Stadia through the App Store. So it's the same explanation that if Stadia and Game Pass are going to offer 100 games, Apple can't verify that every game and then every new game that's going to come through Game Pass. So since they can't verify the stability and verify the safety of every individual game, they're just going to ban the entire service.
Because a company with a 70-page terms of service fucking form anytime you update your phone couldn't slip in the 8 lines of legal jargon to clear that fucking hurdle, right?
Yeah. To me, it definitely seems like some legal explanation on why they're just sticking it to all of their competitors in the tech space.
It's the petty.
Yeah. But in the end, if you have Apple devices, which I do not.
I do.
If you do, no cloud gaming for you yet.
Yeah, no. But I'm getting too old to see all that shit on my phone. I remember I downloaded Fortnite for my phone so I could play it at the nightclub when I was at work. And I just looked at that tiny screen. And it's like, how do you shoot that motherfucker 300 yards away from you on a screen the palm of your size of your palm? Like, how do you shoot that motherfucker? And like, you see kids playing on their phone and like doing all kinds of crazy shit with it. I cannot shoot that dot on, like, I cannot see that dot at all. So I phone gaming is not for me.
No, not, it's definitely not for me. It's not something I'm in any way interested in doing, is playing these games on my smartphone, or even a tablet at that matter. But I still, you know, we wanted to be founding members of Stadia. We felt cloud gaming was
a good concept.
Probably is the future of some level of gaming. Like, there is a market for it. They just need to work out the bugs. And apparently one of those bugs is cross-device being on every kind of smart device, because it's going to be a big
I got a feeling cut. Stadia is going to be the Betamax of at-home viewing. That's just what it's going to boil down to. Good idea, poor execution.
Yeah, poor
now
execution.
Now die in the corner, you Betamax piece of shit.
But either way, come a little over a month from now, curious to hear those initial reviews, see if they have the same kind of latency issues, choppiness and everything else that Stadia suffered from, or is Microsoft going to roll out a better product and keep some smoothness and actual good gameplay?
Yeah, they keep talking about this cloud gaming, and I'm just sitting here wondering what the price of Series X is and when I'm going to be able to pre-order that motherfucker. Like, we're inching up towards those months anytime soon. I'm just waiting for that fucking email. Because if I try to pre-order that shit and it's sold out, I will fucking wig.
Yeah, I'll be waiting probably 3 or 4 years before I upgrade again.
You motherfucker.
But I don't play games. It's a waste of my time. But not time to play games, a waste of my money, I guess, to buy games that I'm not going to play. I've spent enough money on games that I got 5 hours into and never touched again.
Well, that's getting old. Like, that's what happens to those old people. I've tons of games I paid $60 for that I never even got the first achievement. That's the beauty of Game Pass, though. That's why I kind of quit out on that shit. That's why I'm a big fan of Game Pass, because it allows me to try out a new game when I get, you know, a little stale on my other ones and not have to drop to $60 on it to play the first 3 levels before it collects dust on my shelf.
Well, I think that takes us through any entertainment we wanted to talk about this week. We can go ahead and just move over into the tech space here. And I always like to kind of lead with some updates to previous stories. We've got the Garmin ransom or the Garmin hack that took place about 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago. And all of a sudden, Garmin services started coming back online after the reported $10 million ransom that was reported as why the hack was there, that it was a malware that was a ransomware that was put into their system that was freezing up the ability to load data, and that there was a $10 million ransom in order to get that encryption key. And it came back online, and there was nothing said about it being paid. There was nothing said initially, but later it started to come out that Garmin paid some level of a multi-million dollar ransom in order to recover its data, in order to get that encryption key and free up its data, which, like, you know, in cybercrime world, in this corporate cybercrime world, like, that's rule number one you don't do when exploited, is pay that ransom.
No, they paid that money, man. I'm willing to bet the FBI and everybody, just after a few days of Garmin losing out, you know, God only knows how much money because of this, just kind of shrugging their shoulders like, we don't know what to do, man. We don't know how to find these dudes, and we can't get your service back up and running, so we don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, it's becoming a bigger deal, and I'm trying to remember. There was another company right around that Garmin time that had just also paid a ransom. Not they weren't as big as Garmin, but they did pay some level of ransom, and it was a big deal in the sense of, again, they broke the norm that these companies are not supposed to pay this. It's known that it's just, I think it was late in 2019, they were saying that cyber crimes in 2019 doubled. I'm sure then you're going to look at the 2020 data and it's going to have doubled again or some other significant jump in for 2020. And yeah, when somebody gets a $10 million hit on a major company like Garmin, man, if you're a big company on that same level that relies on data exchanges and relies on users to input and kind of have access to data on almost a regular, like, daily basis connection to your servers for these avid runners that are out there logging their miles and doing these things, man, you've got to be thinking that you're next.
If my Garmin tracker didn't count it, it didn't happen, man.
No, yeah.
Like, so you got a lot of people out there.
Put it into a spreadsheet? Yeah. Get the fuck out of here.
A lot of people just said, fuck it, and didn't run for a week. Like, because, yeah, if my Nike app don't count my miles, I'm mad than a motherfucker. My Fitbit don't count my steps, I'm swearing at the world. Like, I feel these people. You know, but, I mean, just the amount of planes that were grounded because of this. You know, so you have, you know, I'm assuming prop planes for farmers and tourist stuff and all kinds of, you know, little businesses that rely on this were all shut down. So if you just look at the stock, probably the stock price of Garmin dropping, add that to the amount of businesses that got put to a halt, $10 million probably didn't seem that much.
Yeah. Again, part of it's in principle. It's still a lot of money. Part of it's in principle. And you never know. You never know if that's even going to work out for you. So reportedly that Garmin, they paid that money through a cybersecurity firm. But the cybersecurity firm that actually, like, negotiated it and exchanged the money with the cyber criminals was the second firm. The first firm, cybersecurity firm that they sought out to do it, completely backed out because they didn't want to deal with these sanctioned cyber criminals. So they completely backed out because it's just, there was no guarantee of success. There's no guarantee of future success, and it sets a bad precedent.
No, I totally get it. I don't have the right answer. that's what I know. You know, nobody was wrong in their ideology, I think, in that scenario. You know, like, but ultimately it's Garmin's decision, is it not? You know,
I mean, yeah, of course it is. And like you said, it, you know, that $10 million hit, if they started losing market share because people start losing faith in their company and everything else, well, that you lose $10 million of profit and $10 million worth of share value in the stock market pretty quick. So maybe you just pay it and move on, because without it, it might be months before you are able to kind of white hat hacker your way through this. But another interesting part of it all is it looks like this was attributed or being reported as attributed to a hacking group called Evil Corp, which is a Russian-backed hacker group that has, like, active U.S. sanctions placed on that group, which is one of the reasons why that first cybersecurity company backed out of supporting Garmin and dealing with that group, that Evil Corp.
Well, they stole their name. They stole their name from Mr. Robot. Get some creativity. The Russians. Well, I mean, hacking is just going to, it's going to be the crime, the most common crime that I think we see in the next decade, you know, as digital currency becomes prominent and it's easy to make these kinds of payments that are untraceable. You don't have to drop off a bag full of bills. You know, you don't have to, like, do a lot of crazy banking things. It's really easy to exchange this in cryptocurrency and things like that. That hacking is going to be pretty common, you know, amongst digital crime and overall crime. And we have a story of theoretical hacking that is pretty quite scary if you really think about it.
Yeah, and this is an article that's coming out about how I saw there were about two or three different articles from different tech magazines and things that talked about how the Neuralink is being reported to be a potential, potentially kind of dangerous place for hackers to hack Neuralink. And again, Neuralink is that the brain chip coming from one of Elon Musk's companies, that there's a brain to computer interface to where you can essentially connect your brain to your smartphone and have access to the internet and everything else through it, as well as like listen to music directly to your brain without any actual auditory sounds outside of your head. And they think that they can hack that in order to erase memories, to steal memories, to hack your thoughts and know your thoughts. And I tend to think, man, this is just some real like fear-mongering writing here.
It's one thing for a dummy like me to be afraid of this when we first heard Neuralink and talked about all its capabilities. Yeah, like I'm just a step above a chimpanzee. So like but when people actually in the tech space and stuff start theorizing on the potential dangers that go along like this, now it really puts like some solid fear in me. Before it was like tinfoil hat. Like, I'm just rambling off on a rant of crazy sci-fi, Black Mirror-type possibilities. But then when people that are supposed to be smarter than I start writing actual articles about it, it gives it a little bit more weight. Even if it is just fear-mongering for clickbait, still doesn't make me sleep any better at night.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely think it's going to be possible. It's to say it's like beyond the realm of possibility that Neuralink would be able to be hacked. Like, of course it can be hacked. It's talking about wirelessly connecting your electrical chip with thousands of nodes that are in your brain, but then wirelessly through Bluetooth connecting that to a phone. Well, there's got to be something that can be exploited there. There's no way to say that it's going to be 100% secure.
Oh, someday somebody's making like that garage door scanner, like where they just scan for the frequency and then your garage door opens. It's just going to do it to your brain. It's going to do it to your brain.
But can you, imagine how complex that hack would have to be, especially when they're talking about these super weird thoughts of like, oh, they're going to be able to hack you and steal your memories to get your email passwords and bank passwords. And I'm thinking, if this hacker is so damn smart that he can figure out how to manipulate these electrodes in my brain, he better not just be going in there just to steal my bank password. Like, that seems to be a real waste of his talents.
So what? It took 50 years to take the computer that shot a man to the moon and put it in your hand? 50 years, call it? We will see that. We will see that in our lifetime. You give it 50 years to where Neuralink can get hacked, to where they can steal the childhood memories directly out of my head. I'll be 90. It's quite possible that medical technology will make me live till 90, and I will see the day where some dude downloads, your favorite memory or your ATM code, or whatever they want. They just hack your brain. This is not out of the realm of possibilities when you really think about it.
No, not out of the realm of possibility. I suppose, but I think it may be a bit premature. We don't even yet know how Neuralink's going to work.
Like we said, it's all about electrical signals and stuff like that. So maybe they won't be able to like go in your head and download random things that you're not thinking about. But you're going to have to like walk around society like as a yogi master with perfect meditation, not thinking anything, because the minute you think anything, it's getting downloaded to some hacker's cloud, so like you're just walking around all day just going, don't think, don't think, don't think, don't think, don't think, like, and then the minute you pull out your credit card and look at it, it's like, god damn it, god damn it.
Or you just walk around thinking of just the weirdest shit you could ever imagine. You just flood it. So that way if a hacker stumbles upon your brain, it's the mind of a sociopath.
Yeah, well, that's not going to end well for you either. Because, yes, I can think of some really weird shit. Some really weird shit. But then I'm the dude that's constantly sitting around thinking of really weird shit. I'm willing to bet it's going to have some negative aspects added to my life.
Possible. It's the price you have to pay for brain security. All right, let's move on here. We got some space news. That's what I want to talk about. And it seems like when you get into the tech world, you could always kind of transition from one Elon topic to the other. So we'll do that here and go from Neuralink to SpaceX. And SpaceX got their first, they're calling it the Hop, with a 500-foot hop with a gigantic stainless steel cylinder that they fired up about 500 feet and then brought it safely back down to the ground. And this is the first kind of launch test, flight test of the Starship. And as somebody who's a fan of what's going on in space and the progression that we're taking towards getting to space, like, there is nothing more important than Starship, in my opinion.
No, it's going to be huge. And like, I don't, for some reason, like, I know they have to do these tests and everything like that, but I don't know. I feel like anytime Elon does something like this, it's like a low-key humble brag. You know, like, you just picture him at a press conference, like, standing there like, what? I just made that motherfucker just go 500 and come right back down. You see that? And then drop a mic and walk out of the boardroom.
Yeah, I mean, and at the same time, he just shrugs off when the other four before this just exploded catastrophically in ground tests and stuff. You know, he's pretty stoic in the sense that, hey, when the failures come, it's just, well, that's science. That's part of it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
when these big successes come, he just says,
if you're going to have any successes in life, when the first four blow up, you just got to shake it off, man. You just let it roll off the back and move on to number five, and then make that bitch hover 500 feet and come back down and tell everyone to eat a dick. Like, that's how you roll when you're Elon Musk.
Yeah, but this one only launched with a single Falcon engine, and you know, the actual flight in order to get like escape velocity out of orbit is going to have the super heavy Falcon rockets. It's going to have multiple rockets, so it's going to have way more thrust and power. But really, this was a test about the structure of Starship, whether it can handle the flight, handle the landing. And I mean, it did. It survived. It was a big successful test for them. Looking forward to, you know, they're still hoping that they're going to launch like a real one of these things next year.
I know. So it's so fast.
It's so ridiculously fast. When you look at like the scale up from Crew Dragon and these other things getting launched, and you look at the size of Starship and the payload that it's going to have, the amount of cargo it's going to carry, the amount of people that it can carry. Again, it is the biggest step that we're going to see in kind of space exploration, because it makes actually taking enough equipment to have people live on the moon.
And honestly, I just don't know how this dude does this shit. I really don't. He's got Tesla. He's got SpaceX. He's got the Boring Company. He's got all this shit going on.
Yeah, Neuralink we just talked about.
I have a podcast and a construction company, and I feel like my brain's going to explode every day.
No, yeah,
every
absolutely.
Every fucking day, I feel like my brain is going to explode trying to remember who I got to call, where I got to go, what I got to do, and what meetings I got to make. Like, and that's two things. I have two balls I can't juggle. This dude is drilling holes in the earth, going to outer space, making cars run on fucking electricity. Like, bro, how does this dude?
And he does it all as like a fairly shitty CEO at times. Because he's still an engineer. Like, he's still actively like involved in some of these projects and still like thinks like an engineer on how to design things instead of thinking about the business end.
Can you just imagine like having a brain that just vomits this shit out so much that you just have to do these things? Like my brain hurts so bad, I must create tunnels in the ground to hover cars from city to city at goddamn light speed. Like, really? That's your ambition, motherfucker? Like,
I can't imagine living with that level of like God complex, that he has to be the one to expand our consciousness to space and save the world, because realistically he's probably our best hope at this point in time. And no, I don't want that. I don't want that responsibility.
No, I just like, he's got to have headaches and just like migraines, and it's just like he births these ideas like through some kind of Neuralink labor and just flamethrower.
He is fascinating. I would
this dude.
Yeah, it's it's amazing. There's going to somewhere down the road, you know, our kids will be reading the biographies of his and everything else, and it'll blow everybody's mind. Everything that he's done, coming from South Africa to here, and what he's accomplished. But he's got a long way to go. So
I just hope he doesn't end up on an Epstein list somewhere. That's my one, come on, don't let me down, buddy. Every time one of those lists drop, I'm just like, come on, don't take my heroes.
Well, he's been fairly conspiracy free at this point. So, all right, and then in non Musk world, but we just talk about this interesting story on the military front as we look at the Air Force is converting like old F-16s into AI piloted aircraft. They're saying that they're using it almost for like target practice and some other stuff. And it's like, yeah, maybe that's what you're using it for today. Yeah,
till the day that the AI plane actually shoots down one of our Air Force pilots, and it's like,
Yeah, so right now, you know, they're taking these old F-16s that were really just kind of like museum pieces almost. You know, they were in the airplane boneyards of the military, and they've outfitted them with various control systems that are all AI driven. So it's AI, completely AI flight, and they're, you know, the applications that like the article from Wired magazine is talking about is about, you know, these can be used for decoy planes. These can be used for various things. It's like, no, I mean, yeah, they can be used for decoy planes, but they can also just be used as planes. like they could just be used as offensive weapons in the future. And it's, you know, it's one of those sad but true things, especially when you look at like aviation. And if you ever really dive into like military and aviation within the military, and you look at like, man, the thing that holds back aviation is that meat sack that sits in the cockpit. Like otherwise, like we could design planes that can cut way harder G's. We can design planes that can travel faster, farther. Like we can engineer our way around it. What we can't do is have that meat sack survive faint multiple G turn. And still be able to target and pull a trigger and drop a bomb or do whatever it needs to do.
When we first read this, there's two things that came to my mind first. One, if all those planes aren't named Maverick, Goose, Iceman, I'm throwing a fucking fit. I want my tax dollars back. Like, that's all there is to it. And two, yeah, they're just going to send the AI one up into the air with a real life Tom Cruise. And they're going to fight, and Tom Cruise is going to shoot down, you know, 97 of them. But number 98 that gets Tom Cruise, that's Skynet, you know, because it's going to have machine learning in it. You know that. And every time that motherfucker leaves the ground and goes up against a human, it's only going to get better. Like,
yeah.
Until that one point where now the AI, you know, jet is doing an inverted G, flipping you off the middle finger as it shoots your fucking ass down.
Well, and I listened some time ago. I think I briefly talked about it on the show months ago. I don't even remember. But on the artificial intelligence podcast, the head of Boeing was talking about like automated flight and AI driven flight, and saying that, like, I mean, if they ever want to pull the trigger on it and like actually further this, that they're ready to. And they can already essentially have like AI drip piloted wingmen. That would be the best wingman ever, in the sense that whatever that lead pilot does, whether that could be a human pilot, whatever he does, that AI driven wingman will perfectly respond and play the role exactly as it is tactically designed and designed through, you know, your policies and procedures and doctrine or whatever it is. But it'll be the best wingman ever, because all it has to do is respond to your behaviors and learn your behaviors. And computers are perfectly suited to do that. So essentially, you know, you get like an Ender's Game situation where you've got one human controlling a fleet of aircraft that are all just mimicking and basing their response off of what that one human is seeing and essentially directing them to do through his behavior.
Sign me up for Mars, man. This future's scary place. The future is a scary place.
Yeah. So then all we got to do is go from in the sky to in space with that same technology, and we're ready to go. We're getting there.
Battlestar Galactica.
All right, well, That's it for a week in news. I think as always, I'd like to go ahead and give a plug over at our ratings and review sections. We'd appreciate it if you'd take a moment, give us rating review, hit a subscribe button, and just make sure that we're queued up in your podcast player. That's always a big help. Every podcaster says it, and they say it for a reason, because it matters.
And as always, join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community. Join in dropping those fire memes, heavy debates, and just overall silliness that goes on in our closed Facebook group. You can get there by searching on Facebook or just typing in the link I just previously said.
Yeah, we should go for like a shameless Facebook group plug prior to our 100th episode.
Shameless is how I live my life, son.
And then we're going to do absolutely nothing special for the 100th episode, but still, it's a momentous occasion. So let's bolster up those numbers over there.
Pump those numbers up, son.
As always, thank you. And we'll talk to you again next week, nerds.
See you next week.